This is The Week in Review. My name's Anissa.
I'm Katie.
And we're news editors at the Oberlin Review. In this segment, we'll be discussing the stories we covered this past week.
So the first article, Anissa, you wrote about a new food truck that has come to town. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
Yeah, so there's a food truck called Steel Magnolia. It's out on Lorraine Street at 408 East Lorraine Street, which is a little bit past IGA. And it was started by this woman, Shantae Jackson. And it has a combination of like traditional Caribbean food, like mixed with soul food, mixed with like vegan, vegetarian, gluten-free options. And it was really cool to talk to. I talked to her and her mom. And it was very, like, probably maybe the sweetest interview I've ever done for the review. Her mom told me that ever since Shantae was a little kid, she always wanted a food truck. She wanted to have her own business. It was incredibly sweet. And Shantae's 17-year-old daughter also helps her on the food truck and is the reason that they have like vegan and gluten-free options. So the thing about this that I found really interesting is it actually took a lot organizationally and like sort of bureaucratically for them to be able to make the food truck happen. There was all of these regulations that were passed by city council about where food trucks can and can't be. And that's the kind of thing that like I never would have really thought about, but it was a big issue for her. She came up with all of these different places where she would park her food truck, and she went to the planning commission and they basically were like, you can't park in any of these places. In 2015, a city council passed a regulation saying that food trucks aren't allowed to operate on the street or any public parks. I talked to the director of the Planning Development Commission, and she said that in many areas like Elyria, like other areas, they kind of just let food trucks park on the street downtown. But in Oberlin, like we don't allow that unless it's a special event. So the only way she could be there is if she was on private property. And the problem with that is that you have to get a conditional use permit to get on private property. And there's just like a lot of requirements you have to fill, and none of them really worked with her being in town. So she had to be sort of near IGA.
Right. And I think I remember you telling me that Oberlin students or recent Oberlin alumni tried to open a food truck in 2015, which is why this happened.
Yeah, exactly. So City Council in 2015 was sort of reacting to two Oberlin students buying a food truck. They wanted to sell gourmet grilled cheese. And before they could even get it up and running, City Council passed this, basically putting heavy regulations on where food trucks are allowed in city limits. I at first didn't fully understand like why this was unfair to the brick and mortar businesses, but then I talked to City Council President Brian Burgess, and he said that the issue of fairness for brick and mortar businesses was not just like competition. It was actually brick and mortar businesses pay property taxes and food trucks don't. And food trucks still, you know, they do pay sales tax, but sales tax is only remitted to the county. It's the city doesn't get sales tax. So the brick and mortar businesses felt it was, you know, unfair that they would allow food trucks to just essentially operate tax-free.
That's really interesting. And speaking of brick and mortar businesses in Oberlin, this week our off-the-cuff interview was with Jessa New, who was one of the founders of Slow Train and The Local, which if you are an Oberlin townie or a student now or even an alum, you probably know what Slow Train and The Local are. They're very popular coffee shops. And our writer, Alana, interviewed Jessa this week. And it was a really interesting interview. Jessa went to Oberlin. She graduated in 2001. She came back to Oberlin eventually and settled down here with her husband, Blake New. And they opened Slow Train in 2012. And what I think is actually the most interesting part about this is that a couple years later, they opened The Local. And, you know, when Slow Train opened, it was super busy and everyone showed up and, you know, wow, a coffee shop in Oberlin. But no one knew that The Local opened. So, you know, which makes sense for geographic reasons. It's sort of underground, has more of a cave-like but cozy atmosphere where the Slow Train is street level on East College Street. So, yeah, I think it was a really fun interview, especially talking to somebody that went to Oberlin but also stayed around in town and created this really successful enterprise.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this. We also got to hear like some stats about what they sell at The Local and Slow Train.
Yeah, so I'm going to take a pause. And listeners, if you had to guess how many bagels The Local sells per year, what would you say? So they sell 40,000 bagels a year. And that's a lot of bagels. I don't know. Also, the most popular drink is a medium latte.
Yeah, so if you want to hear more about Justin New and just generally OBs who stay in Oberlin, head over to oberlinreview.org. You can read the whole off the cuff. Yeah, so this week we also covered the election for city council. Just the local elections this year are primarily city council focused. There are a couple other elections, but they're essentially running unopposed. So the real question for this local election is city council. There's 11 candidates who are running for city council, and a lot of them spoke at this event last Tuesday called Community Candidates Night. It was organized by the League of Women Voters, and we had our writer, Rachel Serna Brown, go to that event and talk to the candidates. A lot of what voters discussed at that event was wanting to have a city council that is a little bit more, where communication is a little bit easier, just because it can be hard to follow stuff like that. And a lot of the candidates running for city council really stressed that that would be a priority for them as well. Other priorities that I think a lot of people are running on are obviously environmental issues are really important in the city of Oberlin and especially on city council. Another thing that candidates stressed was sort of housing, because obviously Oberlin is a lot more expensive to live in than the surrounding areas. Just any ways that candidates had ideas for making housing cheaper. Yeah, but I would say there was a lot of conversation around encouraging discourse between the government and the community in general.
You can vote for city council on Tuesday, November 5th. So our last segment this week is again looking at the archives of the Oberlin Review, which you can do on oberlinreview.org. And this week we decided to look exactly 100 years ago at what was published. And we found a really interesting letter to the editor from October 10th, 1919. So it's called The Freshman Cap Again. And I can read just the beginning part of it. Although regulations regarding freshmen are this year, as usual, in a state of uncertainty as far as many things that concerned, yet there is one rule which must be held to with strictness. This is the Senate rule regarding the freshman cap. Each year there is a certain amount of difficulty with the small number of first-year men who do not seem to realize just why they should be compelled to wear something which no one else has to wear. This year, however, this number seems to be much larger than usual, in spite of the fact that the new style of cap is infinitely better looking and easier to wear than any yearling headpiece that has been worn in Oberlin in recent years. So, fascinating. Just to think that freshmen or first years had to go around wearing a hat that broadcasted their class standing is a really interesting concept to me. I know my grandfather at a different school in the 40s had to do this, and basically his cap was just this little green cap that said the class year on it. And I think if we think now of Oberlin culture, and it's really this culture of being able to wear whatever you want and express yourself however you want, not just in appearance, but in thought and values and, you know, things like gender pronouns. It's really interesting that there's a sort of conforming attitude towards this cap, or that's at least what I'm getting from this letter, just because the person writing it was saying this, but it also seems like there is this rule that was coming from either student government or, you know, the administration. But I kind of like that, you know, 100 years ago, you think of these sort of like old-timey folks, kind of not, you know, as almost like automatons and not humans. But I like that there's a little bit of dissent about this, you know, rule, because it seems very Oberlin to me. We just thought that was fun.
The other thing that's interesting to me about this is that, like, when I was a first year, I felt like everyone could tell. Like, I really just felt so insecure about the fact that everyone knew I was a first year. And then now that I'm not a first year, it's like, oh my God, I was so stupid. Like, obviously no one cares. And no one's thinking about, like, me all the time. But this is so, like, it's so funny to me that, like, it was so important, like, that there was a social status to your year, and that was so important that everyone needed to know about it. And I think that's really funny.
Right. So that was the Week in Review. Now back to the Weekly.